You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday evening, the Rockets are in the midst of two consecutive off days because of the extended off days after finishing up the Eastern Conference portion of their five-game road trip, the longest of the season, on Monday with the win over the Indiana Pacers. The Rockets were able to come back home for a day before going through a practice in Houston today and then flying up to Oklahoma City, where they'll resume play tomorrow night, nationally televised TNT game against the Thunder, and then they'll finish up the season-long five-game road trip against another Western Conference, I don't know if heavyweight's the right term, but another Western Conference playoff contender in the San Antonio Spurs on Saturday night. So to talk about what's to come on the remainder of the road trip and what we've learned from the first three games, which the Rockets have turned around what was a 1-5 start, now all of a sudden 4-5 winners with three in a row, I'm joined by one of my favorite new Rockets voices on Twitter, new to following the, or reporting on the team this year, I should say, and that's Nikias Duncan. He writes about the Rockets for B-Ball Index. First-time guest on the show. You can follow him on Twitter, at NikiasNBA. Nikias, how are you, my friend?
I am doing very well. How about yourself?
Can't complain at all. Glad to get you on. And we're going to be talking about your column from Monday about the Rockets getting on track. It was written just before the win in Indiana, but many of the themes still hold true. Of course, the return of James Harden helps, but there's a lot more to it than that. But before we get to your piece, which folks can find at bball-index.com under the Rockets header, I want to get your thoughts on the lay of the land, the state of the team right now. Because as I see it, there's kind of a glass half empty and a glass half full. They're 4-5, which is a lot better than it was a week ago, but the glass half empty, look, they are behind where nearly everyone expected them to be through nine games. This is a team that won 65 games and came a hamstring away from beating the Warriors last year. I don't think anyone expected them to be 4-5. And even though they've won three in a row, they weren't particularly dominant in any of the three. Now, they did have some headwinds. James Harden missed the first game. Eric Gordon missed the last two. So it's not like they were at full strength. But it's not like they were dominant. It's not like the problems have been fixed. You can also point out that they had a 3-4 night stretch on the road. So there is a headwind factor that you could point to. But generally speaking, the results have not been as dominant as you would think the Rockets, when they're right, would be. The glass half full view would be that, look, I mean, no matter how you take it, they have won three games in a row. And more than that, I think the glass half full view would be, first off, they were never as bad as 1-5 because of the five losses. Four of them came when Chris Paul was suspended and James Harden was injured. So if you don't have one of your two stars, that's a big deal. But beyond that, the Rockets just have too much talent on paper to be as bad as they were in that start, as long as there's no spiraling effect, as long as mentally they're good. And if nothing else, while they're not in peak tactical form at the moment, winning three games in a row, it seems to kind of shake off the sense, at least to me, that they're headed down a bad path to where, for some reason, the result on the floor doesn't match the talent. I think we can all agree the talent is really, really strong. So, Nikias, just kind of your thoughts on that dynamic of, you know, the glass half empty view of, you know, they're still not clicking on all cylinders versus the glass half full that, look, at some point, as long as their vibe is right, the talent should win out.
I think it's what you said. I don't think there's a huge cause for concern right now. Just trying to work in new personnel. There's also been just an overall rhythm factor trying to work new guys in. The suspensions kind of threw things off. You've had injuries to James Harden and Eric Gordon. So, yeah, obviously the start has not been ideal. And then you add in, like, the new freedom of movement rules. They kind of had defenses spiraling, the improved pace. Houston has really struggled to really find their footing on defense, and that's really what made them special last year. You could kind of pencil in them having a top five, top ten offense with a guy like James Harden and Chris Paul at the helm, but the defense, when they were switching everything and stifling guys, is what put them in contender status. And once that kind of slipped, then everything kind of spiraled. But I do think things are kind of turning up for them. Their defense has been great during the streak. They've been allowing around 103 points per 100 possessions, which is a top 10 mark right now. It's hard not to be excited about them turning up, just because it seems like they're starting to find the rhythm. Like you said, they haven't been dominant in wins, but the defense is coming around, and that was the biggest problem area early on in the season.
One of the things that's really stood out to me in this stretch, in which, you know, they struggled through most of the first half in Brooklyn, but they turned it around when Chris Paul had that players-only timeout where he essentially got them together and basically called everyone out. And from there, they allowed 45 points over the next 25 minutes, then gave up 88 in the win over Chicago, 94 in the win at Indiana, which is a very quality win. And one of the things that you wrote about in your observations piece on Monday, and it's something that I alluded to last weekend, were the different ways that they're using Clint Capela. And to some degree, Capela took a bit of a beating early in the season, in the sense that he wasn't as good on switches as he was a year ago. Not that you can ever really expect a guy that's nearly 7 feet tall to hold his own every time with the Damian Lillards of the league, but he was blown by far too often, just not at all even competitive. And, you know, part of it is the Rockets' switching scheme, but another part is that even when it didn't involve Capela, there were issues in which teams would pull him away from the basket, and then there was no rim protection. And so, since this defense has sort of turned it around, one of the switches that I've noticed is that they are finding ways to keep Clint Capela closer to the basket so that they're not absent rim protection as much as they were when they were truly switching everything like they were early in the year. You talked about this a lot in your column, but if you could, just from an X's and O's standpoint, explain what the Rockets are doing differently with Capela that's leading them to, I don't know if it's the same defense as last year, but at least starting to see some similar results.
From what I've seen, they are still a predominantly switch defense, but they have mixed in some dropping. So instead of just swapping assignments when a pick and roll would come, you would have Clint Capela drop towards the rim. Whoever's defending the ball handler will fight over the screen and try to stay attached and pretty much try to either bait the ball handler into a pull-up jumper or just funnel the ball inside to Capela at the rim, which is kind of it saved Capela's energy since he doesn't have to switch on the perimeter. It has help their interior defense because you have Capela back there instead of like a guard trying to rotate weak side and try to protect the run from a drive or something like that. So just mixing that in gives the opposing offense something else to look at and something to think about instead of just waltzing down the floor and just kind of picking out mismatches as easily as they were earlier in the year.
Another interesting layer to the Rockets in this three-game road trip is how they're finding better ways to use Carmelo Anthony. I know in your column a week ago, you were mentioning that while Carmelo was taking a little bit too much blame in terms of, you know, everyone trying to pin things on him, he wasn't exactly a big part of the solution, at least on the defensive end of the floor, because as much as he conceivably could give you offensively, he was also giving up a heck of a lot on the other end. In this winning streak, they found ways to better use him, and that's what I want to kind of focus on both ends of the floor. We'll start offensively, where I think we've seen some synergies, and you wrote about these, between Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, and then defensively, we'll talk about this in a few moments, I think we're starting to see some results from the pairing of Carmelo Anthony and Gary Clark in terms of finding ways to hide Melo's deficiencies, if you will. Also, just having James Harden and James Ennis back, which means you play Carmelo less at the three, that helps a whole heck of a lot in its own right. But let's start offensively. X's and O's, especially early in the second, late in the first quarters, early in the fourth, late in the third, we're seeing some nice synergies on this road trip, especially in Brooklyn, when I think Carmelo and Chris Paul combined for like 60 points between them. You're seeing some synergies in the pick and roll that's almost reminiscent of early last year, when I think a lot of folks forget, but when Ryan Anderson was right, Chris Paul and Ryan Anderson played great together. And then for various reasons, I think confidence, physical issues, Ryan Anderson just sort of fell out of the rotation and became unplayable. But I think we're seeing signs, and you alluded to this, that there's kind of a similar dynamic evolving right now between Chris Paul and Carmelo, but only better because, of course, Carmelo Anthony, even at 34 years old, he's still got a lot more scoring potential than Ryan Anderson. So if you could break down that dynamic, what you're seeing between the two of them and maximizing Carmelo's abilities a little more than they were maybe a week or two ago.
They're using Carmelo Anthony more as a screener. And the pick and pop between him and Chris Paul are basically generating good looks every time down the floor because Chris Paul is a guy that can pull up on a dime. So you can't really drop under in pick and rolls against him. So you don't want to concede those driving lanes to him, because then he can get to the lane, knock down those mid-range jumpers, sprinkling in floaters, and if the help comes, he's spraying the ball out to the corners for threes. And you obviously don't want to give the Rockets too many threes. So teams are switching those actions, and when you have a guy like Carmelo Anthony in, if you put a point guard on his hip, even at 33 years old, Carmelo Anthony has no issue backing a guy down, putting him in the torture chamber and fading over. And if you're trapping Chris Paul to get the ball out of his hands, then you get situations where Carmelo Anthony is popping out, and he's basically walking into wide open jumpers. And you don't want to give him that kind of rhythm, because once the jumper's going, that opens up the pump and drive. And then the offense just becomes a lot more dynamic than that from there. So just getting those two on the same wavelength, I think that's really opened up things for Houston's offense, especially when James Harden is on the bench. You don't have Chris Paul having to create everything. You have a guy like Carmelo Anthony that can abuse switches and other mismatches, and it takes pressure off of everyone.
Let's transition to the defensive end of the floor, because you wrote a little bit about Gary Clark. He still needs to shoot better from three. I believe he was 1 of 6 against Indiana, shooting now below 30% on the year. But aside from needing to shoot a little bit better, he's been everything the Rockets could hope for out of a rookie, and then some, because defensively he's earned Mike D'Antoni's trust so quickly. I believe he played 24 minutes the other night, including he was still in there with barely over 3 minutes to go. And a big part of why he's playing, well, first, in his own right, Gary Clark is playing very solid defense. I believe he's one of their top two in defensive rating. He's also a big weak side shot blocker, I think, in terms of blocks per game. Even though he's only playing 11 minutes, he's still in their top two. So he's given them a lot of value. But one thing I've seen is that they seem to be pairing him a lot with Carmelo Anthony. And it seems to be that, you know, of course, part of the idea with how you use Carmelo, you bring him off the bench, you're putting him against other teams' second-team guys rather than first-team. That hides his defensive liabilities a little bit. But also, you get an ultra-springy guy with weak-side shot-blocking ability like Gary Clark and a high IQ. And it seems like to me that that's what Mike D'Antoni is looking to sort of hide what we all know is there in terms of Carmelo Anthony, 34 years old, year 16, not being a good defender. So as someone who I know last week wrote about Carmelo Anthony's liabilities on that end, just take us through, if you could, how Gary Clark is potentially a bit of a solution to help mitigate that.
He reminds me a lot of P.J. Tucker in the regard that he is fantastic and anticipating, and he's doing a great job of covering for Carmelo Anthony once he finds himself on the perimeter against guys that he can't stay in front of. Gary Clark is a very instinctual defender. He doesn't mind mixing it up against bigger players. So he has figured out a way to contest shots at the rim without fouling, and then also corralling defensive boards, which is obviously important to kind of sparking the transition offense. So he is a guy that covers for Carmelo Anthony athletic deficiencies. Yeah, it's been special watching just how quickly he's figured out NBA defenses. I guess that just comes from him staying those extra years in college. But he just has an ability to read the floor that is really beyond his years.
Yeah, at this point, I think he clearly needs to continue developing his jump shot. But if that's what you want a rookie to grow on, then that's a great spot to be in, because that's one of the easiest things to fix. As someone that follows this team, what are your thoughts on, you know, eventually converting him right now? Of course, he's not on a fully guaranteed contract, but the Rockets do have that extra roster spot available. To me, if he keeps playing like this, I don't think there's any doubt that at some point, if he continues to give you this level of defense, you've got to see him become a regular this year. Is that what you're thinking as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. There really shouldn't be much of a holdup unless they're waiting on another veteran to get bought out that I don't see right now.
Yeah.
I think Gary Clark has already done enough to earn himself a contract with some years on it. And just to go back to the Clark-Anthony pairing, they played 39 minutes together over the win streak. Him and Melo went down the floor together, have allowed a defensive rating of 78.2.
Wow.
Which is, you know, obviously they're going against second units, and that is a small sample size, but it kind of matches the eye test that even when Carmelo finds himself out of position, Gary Clark is doing a great job of cleaning up misses.
As we close out the podcast, I want to turn our attention to the games to come. Rockets have been out east for the first three games of this season-long five-game road trip. They finish up Thursday night in Oklahoma City and Saturday night in San Antonio. I noticed in your weekly column, you actually predicted the Rockets would lose to Indiana but beat Oklahoma City and San Antonio, and that was actually before the injury to Russell Westbrook. Westbrook, I believe, still questionable for tomorrow with that sprained ankle, so it remains to be seen if he can go. Obviously, that changes the outlook, good or bad, a lot based on what the decision is there. But explain to me why you see those as somewhat favorable matchups for the Rockets. You know, we'll go on to the assumption that, let's say, Westbrook plays, but he's limited. Where do the Rockets match up well? We'll start tomorrow in Oklahoma City. What are the things the Rockets can exploit there?
I think it just comes down to math against Oklahoma City. They have the pieces for a great defense, but they haven't been great yet. I'm sure they'll probably come around once they get a little healthier. You know, Andre Roberson is still out. Russell Westbrook isn't a great defender, obviously. But when it's between him, Raymond Felton, and Dennis Schroeder, then obviously he kind of raises the floor of a defense just by virtue of the other options. But Oklahoma City just cannot make outside shots. They don't have enough shooting. And against a team like Houston that likes to get out and generate a bunch of three-point shots, I think it's really just going to come down to Houston making more outside shots than Oklahoma City can. And for San Antonio, they just don't have a soul that can guard Chris Paul or James Harden at this point. And then once you look at their big man rotation, you have Pau Gasol, who is ancient. LaMarcus Aldridge, who is a much improved defender, but he's not springy on the perimeter. Jakob Poeltl is a guy that's he's fine, but he's obviously not a stopper. Mm-hmm. And when you have a guy like Clint Capela who can, you know, shake loose and pick and roll, I think that's just a bad matchup waiting to happen for San Antonio. Chris Paul should be able to turn the corner whenever he wants to. We know DeJounte Murray, he's out for the year. James Harden should be able to turn the corner against whoever's guarding him. They just don't have the bodies. And once those guys turn the corner, the defense has to rotate, and that's just going to open up things for everyone. Capela rolling at the rim, P.J. Tucker or Eric Gordon or whoever spotting up from three, and I just think that has the potential to get ugly pretty quickly.
Gordon's questionable for tomorrow, so it looks like there's a chance that he'll play, but if not by tomorrow, I would think definitely by the weekend. Last thought, I want to get your take on what's a reasonable expectation for the Rockets through this hell stretch, because they're in a stretch right now, beginning with that Monday game in Indiana, and that's what made it all the more important that they won, where they don't have a breather game for a while. I would say the next game in which you say the Rockets clearly are a favorite, meaning at home against a team they should beat by a lot. Yes, I know they're winless at home, but that's sample size. Would be next Saturday night against the Kings. They're in the middle of a six-game stretch. It started at Indiana, then at OKC, at San Antonio, home for Indiana, and that Indiana game is on the second night of a back-to-back, then at Denver and home for Golden State. So you got the first one. That's big. But of these five that are left, Thunder, Spurs, and Nuggets on the road, Pacers and Warriors at home, Rockets at 4-5 right now, so they're still trying to dig out of that 1-5 start. What's a reasonable number for them to get? I mean, I think, you know, even 2-3, I wouldn't feel terrible about, but I think, you know, to me, where they are, and they're still not 100% healthy yet, we'll see what happens with Gordon, I think you'd have to be very happy with 3-2 given that schedule. I think that's kind of, I think if you can get out at 3-2, and that would put you at 7-7 through 14 games, and then the schedule starts to ease up beginning next weekend, home against Sacramento, I think overall that would put them in a pretty healthy spot, given their 1-5 start, especially. Is 3-2 a fair goal? What do you think about where they should be looking to be at the end of that stretch?
I would say 3-2 is definitely the most realistic goal there. Obviously, you would love to see them get kind of a in-your-face win against Golden State, but that seems unlikely with the way Golden State has been playing this year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do think Indiana can be a win. I think they can get these next two. Denver's going to be a bit of a toss-up. You know, Denver is defending extremely well right now. I think they're third in defensive rating over the last week or so, mm-hmm. or third overall, one of those two. But there's been a little bit of luck involved with the way the opponents have shot threes against them. So I think there's definitely a path for them to get Clint Capela rolling to the rim against Nikola Jokic and pick and roll and kind of open up shots there. And if Houston has a hot night from three, there's no question they could absolutely beat Denver there. But I do think 3-2 is probably the more realistic goal.
We're on the same page. Folks, he's Nikias Duncan. Follow him on Twitter, at NikiasNBA, and you can read his work online at the B-Ball Index. That's bball-index.com. Go to the Houston Rockets page, and you will see his columns on a weekly basis. Nikias, thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk soon.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Good stuff there with Nikias Duncan. Apologies for the brief technical glitch in the middle of it, but we got that sorted out, and hopefully that serves as a pretty good primer for what's going to be a very challenging five-game stretch for the Rockets coming up. three games on the road, beginning with the nationally televised showdown on TNT tomorrow night against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So until then, until our recap after that game, this is where we'll leave off. If you want more content before the next game, before the next post-game, including in-game commentary, the best place to get that is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. I've also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website, lockedonrockets.com. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe to us and leave us a 5-star review, you can do that at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, pretty much wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us because we're part of a great network of local experts across the NBA, MLB, NFL, college sports. If you'd be kind enough to subscribe and leave a 5-star review, that's how you'll get the benefit of episodes right when they come out, even before I post it on Twitter. And if you leave that 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So, with all those plugs out of the way, thanks to Nikias Duncan for joining us. Thanks to you guys for listening. And please come back tomorrow right here to Locked On Rockets. We'll have full post-game coverage of Rockets Oklahoma City after tomorrow night's nationally televised game on TNT, a 7 p.m. tip. Talk to you guys then. For now, have a good night.